This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. It's no secret that Raleigh and other parts of the Triangle have changed drastically in the past decades. IBM moved here in the 60s, drawing in talent from other parts of the country and the world. Those changes have done nothing but continue since. And now some linguists are asking, is the Southern accent dying in Raleigh? Robin Dodsworth is an associate professor in linguistics at North Carolina State University. She and her team have recorded and analyzed hundreds of Raleigh natives. And Robin Dodsworth joins us in our studio now. Welcome back. Good to have you here.
Thanks a lot, Frank. It's great to be here.
So I said something like a Southern accent. I mean, there are many Southern accents that are quite distinct from each other, right? I mean, that's the first thing we have to say.
Well, that's right. So throughout the southeastern United States, there are some linguistic features that unite most people or that unite most dialect areas, but then there are just as many, if not more, things that distinguish one from another.
So let's talk about what we have in common, that thing that a northerner would hear as the Southern accent if they didn't know about these regional differences. What is that? How do we describe the thing that happens that to a northerner sounds like an accent?
Right. Well, the main thing is what's often called the southern vowel shift, which means that certain vowels, we call them the front vowels, kind of traded places with each other. So the vowel in beat kind of traded places with the vowel in bit, and then bait and bet kind of traded places. And then finally, the a vowel, like in bat, kind of shifted up, so it's a little closer to e or a.
So that the shift happened, and we think of the Southern accent as having been here, if it is an accent, for a long, long time. Interesting thing about your research is that it appears to be only 100 years old or so?
Well, that's a good question, you know, and linguists actually aren't sure how old the Southern vowel shift is. You know, intuitively, I think as a culture, we think of it as being really old. You know, we think of the Southern dialect as being this old traditional thing that we're only now starting to lose, you know. But in fact, there's some evidence that suggests it didn't really get going until after the Civil War. There's really not very much evidence about the very earliest stages of it for obvious reasons, right? So we don't have recordings of people who were fighting in the Civil War and so forth. There's one study that looks at the descendants of Confederate soldiers who moved down to Brazil and finds that these speakers show some traces of the very earliest stage of what we know as the Southern vowel shift. And the very earliest stage is actually that moving of the sound I to a. So words like high and tide would sound more like ha and tad. So those descendants of Confederate soldiers show a little bit of that, right? Certainly not nearly as much as anyone in the South would today. But that suggests that maybe things got started right around then.
Yeah, but I have to ask you what evidence you have, because you said we don't have recordings. We've got all those great Matthew Brady photos, but that doesn't help you much, does it? So how do you know? How do you guess?
Yeah, well, I think guess is about the right word. But if you look at the Raleigh data that we have, you see that the very oldest speakers in the corpus who were born early in the 20th century are, as a group, not as Southern as the speakers who were born in the 30s and 40s, right? So you really get this robust Southern shifting happening with speakers born in the 30s. I think there was a clip played just a few minutes ago with a guy from 1939.
Yeah, well, let's hear more of that. This is a clip, and this is a recording. It wasn't done in 1939. This individual was born in 1939. Let's listen.
You know, I don't go to Atlanta very often, but I went not too long ago. I couldn't believe. Even the new outer loop is so congested. And, you know, I look at Raleigh, you know, we're not near. We're bad, but nothing like that. I see those people driving into the city to go to work, and I know it'd take them an hour or so. And bumper to bumper, I just would have a hard time doing that.
But. All right. Now, born 1939, pretty common. Now, I should ask you, is this common to the Piedmont, or would we hear this all over North Carolina, or that's not the point? What is significant about that sound and how prevalent it might have been in this region?
Well, you would hear a lot of elements of that throughout the southeastern U.S., and not just the southeastern U.S., you know, I mean, we're talking into Texas and west of Texas and so forth. So the elements of the southern shift that we're talking about here today, yeah, those are somewhat common across a huge geographic area. Now, there are lots of other features that are not common, but and then even, of course, as you alluded to, within North Carolina, you'll get different dialect regions. So I think we're all familiar with the Outer Banks, where they sort of iconically say hoitoid instead of high tide.
And mountains, you know, very, very different from the rest of the state, right?
Yeah, mountains very different. You get an Appalachian region there. A big difference between Appalachian speech and non-Appalachian Southern speech, at least kind of in the aggregate, you know, as a group, is that outside of the Appalachian South, you'll get people saying ha and tad, but they'll say white rice, you know. So there are some types of words where you'll say that I sound instead of the ah sound. And then within the Appalachian region, it is possible to say white rice.
I see. Right. So we just heard an individual born in 1939, and as you suggest, if he had been born in 1915, he would sound less Southern. And then again, if we move up to 1968, we hear the accent begin to wane. So here's someone with a born in Raleigh, but 1968. Let's listen.
So she's great. My mom had a pipe burst under her foundation one Christmas. And, you know, I go over there to help, but my help consists of, let's get grandma out of the house and take her home. And my sister immediately starts calling people who do water damage. And she says, yep, I know these people will come out on the day after Christmas and we'll get fans set up, we'll get this place dried out. And she knows all that stuff. It's awesome.
All right. So now there's an individual who sounds a little different. Maybe you can tell us how. But then again, the question is, how representative is that voice of those born in 1968 in this region?
Well, of those born in Raleigh, that voice is very representative. So that person is not at all an outlier. You know, if you look at the graphs that we have of, you know, hundreds of speakers, that person is very, very typical for his age group. One of the things you might have noticed about him is the way he said water. So he said it kind of like water, you know, or water. That's kind of a regional feature that's not really part of the Southern vowel shift, but nevertheless, it's something we've got here, and that's something that's disappearing also.
What's happening, do you think? 1968, I mean, IBM hadn't been here that long. It wasn't so long that we had seen a kind of carpetbag invasion. Was that it, and what else might account for it?
Well, as you say, there's the carpetbag invasion. So RTP really got going in the 60s, especially when IBM came in. And right then, you had lots of people moving down from New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, lots of other places, and bringing their kids with them. So people who were born in Raleigh started going to school with kids who had actually spent their first few years in Binghamton, New York, and wherever else, you know. So that's part of it, right? So there's just this, we call it dialect mixing and what we call dialect leveling. So that means that regional features tend to disappear when you get this mixing of lots of different ways of talking. But we also can't discount the fact that the Southern way of talking, the Southern dialect, is kind of stigmatized, right? So people in other parts of the country think that it sounds uneducated, think that it sounds, you know, various negative things. They also think it sounds friendly, you know, research shows.
That's interesting.
But a lot of people don't want to sound Southern, right? So there's a certain motivation within especially urban areas to not sound Southern.
Well, that answers the question, why don't the foreigners sound like take on the Southern accent? And, you know, why is there any kind of mixing at all? You just get assimilated.
Yeah, that's right. You get assimilated. And that's also partly why the change has been very gradual. So the fact that it's due largely to assimilation and not just due to, oh, I don't want to sound Southern, right? That is why you get a very, very gradual, almost linear shift, you know, year to year.
But by 1984, you're sounding like, if you're born in 84, you're sounding like this.
We thought that maybe driving, you know, 60 miles an hour and it's only moving like 15 or 20, that we would outrun it. Well, these things are so big, you can't really outdrive it, you know, even though you're going faster than it is.
Now that, you wouldn't know where that person was born, would you?
You wouldn't know where that person was born. You could rule out a couple of things, but yeah, so you might notice that when she said drive, it sounded like drive, not like drive. You might also notice when she said the word thought right at the beginning, you know, she didn't say it like thought or thought, right, in a in a more kind of older Southern way. She said it like thought. And that itself is also a feature that's changing in Raleigh and lots of other parts of the country, in fact.
Does it change more quickly? I mean, the intuitive answer is yes, more quickly in a place like Raleigh that has a big influx of population from other places, or is it pretty steady in other parts of the South?
Well, the Southern shift in general is going to change more quickly in urban areas like Raleigh and Charlotte than it will in small towns, that's for sure. So I see a lot of students coming into NC State from small towns and rural areas who still sound a lot more Southern than kids who are from Raleigh, for sure.
Why does an accent persist? Why doesn't it all change at the same time? Who keeps their accent?
Well, that's a great question. And we could also ask, why do new regional accents develop? So, you know, you yourself are from Buffalo, right?
And that's right. Pat. Yeah.
And so, you know, that area has what we call the Northern Cities Chain Shift, which is a relatively new dialect, and that's a regional dialect. Why did that arise? Why do some areas retain, you know, regional forms? Well, we're working on that, but we really don't know, to tell you the truth, and there's not necessarily just one answer.
Robin Dadsworth is an associate professor of linguistics at North Carolina State University. So great to have you here on Buffalo Speaks.
Thank you.
Just ahead, the first openly lesbian pastor ordained in the Presbyterian Church tells us about her first year in Chapel Hill. You're listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Stay tuned.